You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Friday, so it's time for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, with Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Senator Sanders, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So, a lot going on in the world today. Where do you want to start?
Well, a lot going on in the world, a lot going on in my little state of Vermont. We're on Easter break now, so I have the opportunity of doing what I love to do, and that is get around the state. And I want to tell listeners just a little bit about some of what I did in Vermont, because what is happening here is happening in every state in the country. Earlier in the week, I went up to the very northern part of the state, in Newport, a few miles away from the Canadian border, and I talked to kids at the high school up there, North Country High School, and then I went to a state college not all that far away, Linden State College. And not surprisingly, what I heard from young people is their very serious concerns about the high cost of college. These are kids who don't have a lot of money up in northern Vermont, who would like to go to college in many instances, worried about whether they're going to be able to afford to go and worried about what kind of loans they get out of school with. Went to the Linden State College, talked to a young man there. He said, well, I'm going to leave this state college $60,000 in debt. And another guy piped up at the back of the room and he said, well, I'm hoping to go to a medical school, want to be a doctor, and I will leave school several hundred thousand dollars in debt. And of course, this is going on all over the country. And the reality is that we're having more and more working class kids saying, you know what, I guess I'm not going to go to college. I'd love to go. I think I have something to offer, but I can't do it. I don't want to get out of school deeply in debt. So this is clearly a crisis of enormous consequence, which has to be dealt with. The young people who are leaving school are being really shackled with these terrible, terrible debts. And we hear from them, you know, every week I hear from one or another student. They're forced to go into professions that they do not necessarily want to go into because they have to pay off the debt, et cetera. And then the other half of the problem is not only young people in college and graduate school in debt, then you have working class families saying, you know, I work, my husband works, and how am I going to get my kid a good preschool, into a good preschool, good child care? Because that's outrageously expensive. So those are areas that we have got to take a giant look at. We should recognize that you have countries like Denmark, Finland, France, Norway, Scotland, Germany, and many others who provide free college education for their young people because they understand, and it's not just young people, they understand that having a strong educational system which allows anybody in the country that the education they need is in the best interest of that country, especially in a very, very competitive global economy. So that's one thing that I saw, just getting around Vermont, but it's certainly a national problem. On our website, Tom, on another issue, April 15th was tax day. On our website, sanders.senate.gov, we have a really interesting survey entitled Top 10 Corporate Tax Avoiders. And that list includes General Electric, Boeing, Verizon, Bank of America, Citigroup, Pfizer, FedEx, Honeywell, Merck, and Corning. And I want to say something a little bit about General Electric, because when we talk about oligarchy in America, when we talk about this country moving away from a strong middle class and a democratic society where ordinary people have power, political power, to an oligarchy where the country is, much of the economy is owned by a handful of very, very wealthy corporate guys, and the political process as a result of Citizens United is moving in the direction of oligarchic control because, you know, the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and these other billionaires can spend huge sums of money on the political process electing their people. But when I talk about that, I want to just focus on General Electric for a moment. I want to go back a good number of years where Jack Welch, who used to be the CEO of GE, who left with a huge golden umbrella, golden parachute, I think to the tunes of well over $100 million. And he said, and I think you remember this, Tom, he said when people said, you know, well, what about manufacturing? What do you do? He said, well, if he had his druthers, every manufacturing plant that GE owned would be on a barge. Do you remember that quote?
Yeah, I do.
And what he meant by that is you would then take that barge to the lowest wage country in the world. And in a sense, that's what General Electric has done. They've downsized substantially in the United States, moved a lot of jobs to China, Mexico, many other countries. But in terms of taxes, from 2008 to 2013, while GE made close to $34 billion in U.S. profits, it did not pay any federal income taxes. And in fact, it received a total tax refund of more than $2.9 billion from the IRS. In other words, GE's effective U.S. corporate income tax rate over this six-year period was minus 9%. How's that?
That's like living and being paid 9% by the government.
Right.
9% of billions to do. That's incredible.
I mean, it goes on. And, you know, and then you have to remember that, you know, Jeff Immelt and these other corporate tycoons sit on the business roundtable, and a year or so ago they came to Washington and they said, well, you know, I think you should cut or raise the retirement age for Social Security and Medicare because we have a serious deficit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
I remember.
I mean, the chutzpah to go about doing that. And of course, Inmelt has a retirement account at GE worth an estimated $59 million and made $19 million in total compensation last year. And I use that. You know, that's GE and you got Boeing and Verizon and all these other guys. To talk about this is what oligarchy is about. It is very wealthy people who choose not to pay taxes in this country, who choose to move jobs abroad, who in many cases for the workers they still have in the United States, they try to push down their wages, take away health care. And then they, through their very powerful lobbying in Washington, they say, oh, well, gee whiz, we have a deficit problem and we should raise the retirement age, which is what the Business Roundtable said. And Business Roundtable is the organization made up of all of major CEOs of large corporations. And their great, brilliant idea was to raise the retirement age of Social Security to 70 and Medicare eligibility to 70 as well. That's called oligarchy. That is the wealthy and the powerful making out like bandits, having enormous power, and then continuing their war against working families. We did something, a fellow on my staff did a great job, and when we talk about oligarchy, kind of found out, but many people already knew, but got some more details, that in terms of the Koch brothers, what is not widely known is that David Koch ran for vice president of the United States in 1980 on the Libertarian Party. What is very interesting is to read that party's platform and in a very frightening way to understand to what degree the Koch brothers have taken this country to the extreme right. In 1980, when Koch ran, that party received 1% of the vote, and it was seen to be kooky and kind of out of touch with reality. If you look at what they talked about in 1980 and where the Republican Party is today, what was right-wing extremist in 1980 is now kind of mainstream Republican in 2014. Let me just very briefly mention some of the planks they had in 1980. They urged the repeal of federal campaign finance laws so that billionaires like the Koch brothers could own the political process. Well, guess what? We are moving rapidly in that direction. That's what Clarence Thomas wrote recently in his McCutcheon decision, and that is what the chairman of the Republican National Committee wants to do right now. They favor the abolition of Medicare and Medicaid programs. Well, if you read the Ryan budget, what you'll find out is they're moving in that direction as well. Why don't we pick this up after the break?
Yep. Okay. 15 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Check out Senator Sanders' Facebook page and his website over at sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back. Senator, did you want to finish that thought?
Yeah, just that, you know, they talked about back in 1980 calling for the abolition of Medicare and Medicaid. And if you read the Ryan budget, that is clearly the direction we're looking at. Ryan budget, it's massive cuts in Medicaid and basically ending Medicare as we know it. Back in 1980, David Koch's Libertarian Party called for the repeal and I quote, of the fraudulent, virtually bankrupt, and increasingly oppressive Social Security system, end of quote. Well, we got a lot of Republicans who certainly buy that today. They want the abolition of the governmental postal service. They want that gone. Back in 1980, they opposed all personal and corporate income taxation, including capital gains tax.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. Now, the point about it is not how crazy they were in 1980, but to what degree their billions of dollars spent in all kinds of organizations has kind of transformed the Republican Party from a moderate conservative party, center-right party, into a right-wing extremist party. And that is the major political, most significant political reality of today, that transformation, and of taking the whole country to the right. And these guys, they keep moving. They're going to be pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into congressional elections, into presidential elections. And if they get their way and the Supreme Court rules that there are no limits on campaign finance, they will, to a very significant degree, one family worth somewhere between $80 or $100 billion will control the political process. Okay, we've gone over my usual stay here, so let's get to some questions.
Okay, fine. Let's see here. Paul, watching Free Speech TV in South Lyon, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Senator, I was against you running for president because I remember Ralph Nader running in 2000, and the result was 8 years of suffering with Republicans in the White House. But I changed my mind. 2 years ago, the Republican Freak Show had about 30 debates, and they just looked worse and worse. I think the opposite would be true if you debated your fellow progressives in the Democratic Party. The more people hear, it will be great for the whole country. If you run, will it be in the Democratic primary?
Well, Paul, that's a decision that I haven't made yet. But thank you very much for your thoughts. I haven't decided if I'm going to run, and I haven't decided how I run. That's a decision an issue I will be discussing with friends all over the country. But the point that I've made repeatedly is that at a time when the middle class of this country is disappearing, and we are moving, in my view, toward an oligarchic form of government, we need candidates who are not part of the old-fashioned establishment. We need candidates out there, and I'm not suggesting I'm the only one, but we do need people who are going to stand up for the working class and the middle class of this country and understand that if we do not make some very bold changes in what's going on in America, you're not going to have a middle class left. And you are going to live in a society where a few billionaires control the economy and the political process. And that surely is not what this country is supposed to be about.
Yeah. We just have 10 seconds, Bernie. Are you familiar with this new book by Thomas Piketty about capital in the 21st century?
I haven't read it, but a lot of folks are talking about it.
Yeah. We're trying to get him on. I just ordered a copy of it. I haven't read it yet either. I've read two summaries.
The thesis here is, and they do a lot of good research, is it's not only that the rich are getting richer now, is that the richer are going to continue to get richer at the expense of the middle class and working families.
Yeah, unless we do something.
Unless we do something.
Yeah, there you go. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls right after the break. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back. The hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. And it's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, a national town hall meeting with the guy I think of as America's senator, Senator Bernie Sanders. And you're with us here, Senator?
I'm right here.
Okay. Peter in Media, Pennsylvania. Peter, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. Thank you for taking my call. Senator, I want to ask if it would be possible, a simple idea that even if the idea is just proposed by progressives, it would help them win elections. And if it's actually executed, would help people win. And that is the concept of having congressional representatives and senators given the power of line item voting in any legislation. So therefore, a representative or a senator could vote for education or for healthcare without voting for the Bridge to Nowhere port that's added on to proposed legislation. Would it be possible even just to propose during campaigning but actually institute line item voting for congressional representatives and senators?
Well, you know, Peter, anyone can introduce anything that they want. I think the concern that you have is that very often, and this is absolutely true, that are important pieces of legislation that are supposed to be dealing with one issue, a lot of stuff gets tacked on. And I had that experience just last month. We introduced a comprehensive veterans bill, which was dealing with many of the serious problems facing our veterans community. It had the support of virtually all of the veterans organizations out there. And, you know, some of my Republican colleagues wanted to tack on, I think, sanctions against Iran onto a bill dealing with veterans issues. So you see this all of the time. And I think your point is well taken. I don't know if your solution is necessarily the best approach, but I think people get very frustrated when they see so much additional stuff and irrelevant stuff tacked on to a piece of legislation.
Lloyd in Lakeland, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Was that me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Thank you, both of you guys, for what you're doing. I have a feeling, my question is, we got a lot of support listening to you guys. You're preaching to the choir. My question is, how do we get the majority of the choir that are not voting back to the booth, given the, you know, the juggernaut that the Republicans are throwing into the elections? How are we going to do that?
Now, Lloyd, I think you are asking what we used to say is the $64 question. Probably a little bit more.
Now it's the $64 million question.
$64 million question.
Groucho's rolling over in his grave.
And I'll tell you what I think. Here's what you got. What today's Republican Party believes is that elections should be about billionaires being able to spend as much money as they want, and they are spending it. Koch brothers are already spending huge amounts of money all over this country. They will spend more. Sheldon Adelson had, as I think listeners will remember, a remarkable meeting in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago where he invited potential Republican candidates for president to come in and tell him what they would do for him. And if he liked them, he will support one of them and give them, I suppose, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's where American, quote-unquote, democracy is today. What is the antidote? What do we have to do? I think, Lloyd, that what we need to do, and this is not easy stuff. Trust me, it is not easy. It's a lot easier talking about it than doing it. But what we need is to develop a strong grassroots movement all over this country, focusing on a progressive agenda. I'll tell you something, Lloyd. It blows my mind that there are some, I think it's 24 states in the country, where governors and legislatures have rejected Medicaid as part of the Affordable Care Act. And I would think that in all of those 24 states, Republican states, that people would say, I cannot believe that when I desperately need health insurance or my kids need health insurance, that you are telling me that you're not going to take the Affordable Care Act expansion of Medicaid, even though it costs the states nothing, zero, not a penny, for the first 3 years. Simply denying people the right to get health insurance for ideological and political reasons. And I would hope that in those 24 or so states, people would be standing up and say, we got to get rid of those governors, and we got to get rid of those members of the state legislature.
Yeah. And these aren't, by the way, Senator, these are not even the, quote, welfare queens of Ronald Reagan. 100% of the people covered by the Medicaid expansion are working because you have to have an income to make more than the state Medicaid limit and less than the Obamacare limit. So 100% of these people who are being screwed by these governors are working people.
So, you know, in answer to Lloyd, what we need is a progressive agenda. That should be the major issue. We also need to be talking about the need, the absolute imperative that we create millions of decent-paying jobs. Certainly we're better off economically today than we were 5 years ago when Bush left office. But the reality is that real unemployment today is close to 9%, youth unemployment close to 20%. We have to create millions of decent-paying jobs. We've got to raise the minimum wage. We've got to deal with the issue of pay equity, so that women do not make 70 or 75 cents of the dollar that men make. We have to raise you know, the minimum wage to a living wage. Got to deal with, I mentioned earlier, college affordability. A lot of issues out there. And we have got to rally the American people around that agenda and make sure that they're not voting for people who do not support that agenda.
Senator, just 15 seconds left. Best way to create jobs, trade policy?
The fastest
infrastructure?
The most practical way right now is a massive investment in infrastructure. Mm. And that is roads and bridges and water systems and wastewater plants and rail. You do that, you make the country more productive, and you create millions of jobs.
Yeah, Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman program. We'll be back with your calls for Senator Sanders right after the news here at the bottom of the hour. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov, and his Facebook page as well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And visit sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, Senator Sanders' newsletter. It's great. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator, you're still there with us?
I am right here.
I've forgotten to put you on hold. I have no idea what you were hearing. I hope it was okay. Joyce in Clinton, Iowa. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. I understand that when the elections are in Florida this time, they won't let them use the washroom. Why can't a company that has porta potties, why can't they put them out for the people?
Did you see this story, Senator?
I did not.
In Miami-Dade County, where people were having to wait 10 hours in line to use the bathrooms, they announced earlier this week or late last week that in the upcoming elections in November, they are going to close all the bathrooms at these facilities. If you step out of line, you lose your place.
What can you say?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It's all about making it harder to vote.
Yeah. Okay.
Bring an empty Coke bottle. I don't know what to say beyond that. Okay, Tom in Seattle, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
There could be all kinds of interesting protests.
Yes.
Action, huh?
Yeah, actually. That's a great one for guerrilla theater. Tom in Seattle, listening on KBCS, our Pacifica affiliate out there. Hey, Tom, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'll try to be quick here. So, Senator Sanders, Chris Hedges, Lawrence Lessig, Tom Hartman, Wendy Davis, all in the same room together. How do we do that? How do we improve, communication, get us all linked up for a united front? On the other side, you got the Koch brothers, Citizens United, Americans for Prosperity, all talking to each other. And if you know where I'm going with this, then please. I just see that all of these issues that we have, whether it's $15 an hour, even climate change, which I think is probably the most important, and Keystone. I mean, all the notes that you were hitting on even the last news report here just a minute ago. All these things have in common getting money out of politics. And I don't, in my view, I just don't see things changing unless we can do that.
Okay, Tom, let's get Senator Sanders' thoughts on that.
I think Tom is. Raises a number of issues, money and politics, which is huge. It is absolutely huge. And as you have heard me say many, many times, Tom, out there I know people are concerned about the economy and the need to create jobs, the need to raise the minimum wage and pay equity for women. People are concerned about the need for a universal health care system, guaranteeing health care to all people. People are deeply concerned about educational issues, affordability of college. People are concerned about climate change. But as Tom of Washington just told us, all of these issues are absolutely tied to campaign finance, because right now, despite what the American people want, and poll after poll tells us very clearly, the American people soundly reject this right-wing extremist ideology. And yet, because these billionaires have unlimited amounts of money to spend in elections and can provide strong support to their candidates, we may be moving in a direction that the American people really do not want us to go. And the question is, how do we turn that around? And the answer, to my mind, is that people must understand that we are in a huge struggle for the future of this country. Not participating in the political process is something that people just no longer have the luxury to do. They've got to roll up their sleeves and get involved, because the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, and other billionaires, believe me, they understand the importance of politics. And if we're going to save this, the middle class of this country, or what's left of it, we've got to get involved as well.
And there are some groups that are pulling people together. On May 10th, Jim Hightower and me and John Nichols and Tom Hayden are going to be in Massachusetts. I'm going to be doing a book signing that night.
Guess who else is going to be there?
Pardon?
Guess who else is going to be there?
Yeah, I've a certain famous senator.
I'll be there as well. Look, right. There are good things happening all over this country. I'm going to be in South Carolina and North Carolina in a couple of weeks. In North Carolina, you have that group.
Moral Mondays, yeah.
Moral Mondays, who are just doing an extraordinary job. If anyone interested, I will be in South Carolina on Friday, April 25th, 7:30 p.m. at the International Longshoremen's Hall in Charleston, South Carolina. But, you know, Tom, that is the point. All over this country, you have groups fighting to overturn Citizens United, fighting hard to stop this Keystone Pipeline and to help us lower greenhouse gas emissions by transforming our energy system. You got huge numbers of people from one end of the country to the other. But I think what the caller was talking about is the need for us to begin to work together in a very coherent way, and that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. James in Lockport, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, this is an honor to speak to you.
Well, thank you, James.
My question to you, first of all, the Republican Party is very good at, you know, organizing and getting out their talking points, as you can see. And I think the Democrats actually are very poor at that. What I would like to see is the Democratic Party going out there before the midterm elections and actually touting the Republican record on what they've been doing. They always tout that they're the party of freedoms and liberties, and they go out there restricting voter rights, a woman's right to choose. And I was wondering if we could... Actually, I'd like to see the Democrats go out there and say, if you give us 2 years of no obstruction, let us show you where this country can go. Do you think I can count on you to get the Democrats in the Senate and in the House to move in those kind of lines?
Well, this is an issue that, you know, I certainly agree with you on. But I think sometimes, and I hear this very, very often, and there's truth to what you're saying. But the other thing, James, that you have to appreciate, it's not that there are not some Democrats, not all. You got some progressive Democrats out there. I'm going to be in Minnesota shortly with Keith Ellison, who's chairman of the Progressive Caucus, who's out there all the time doing a great job. You got people like Rich Trumka, who's head of the AFL-CIO, out there all the time doing a great job. But you know what? You do not necessarily hear what they are saying, because you got a media out there that is not particularly interested in reporting what they're saying. Tom, you may want to tell listeners what you and I chatted on about before we went on the air. When we talk about, people say, well, why don't I hear this? Well, you know what? You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show, and Tom does a great job in telling you what's going on, and so do a bunch of other progressive radio talk show hosts. But 95% of talk radio is right-wing or extreme right-wing. Tom, why don't you tell people, if you don't mind, what you just read?
Well, this is an article that's up in Politico. It's called The Tea Party Radio Network by Ken Vogel and Mackenzie Wegner. And they just discovered that there's this very well-funded, billionaire-funded right-wing network that has been pouring money into right-wing talk show hosts. And let me just say for the record that nobody gives us money on this show, and to the best of my knowledge, any of the other progressive shows. But Sean Hannity in 2008 got $1.3 million, or in 2011, from Heritage. Mark Levin was paid $757,000 from the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity. The Senate Conservative Fund paid $427,000 to Simon & Schuster to buy copies of Mark Levin's book. to turn it into a bestseller. Heritage Foundation paid Rush Limbaugh $9.5 million. This is direct money directly to the talk show.
Above and beyond what you're saying, as I understand, I haven't read the article, but what you're saying is above and beyond the very lucrative salaries that they make doing their show.
Right.
They're getting funded by the Koch brothers and other right-wing groups.
That's correct.
So what you really have then is a whole operation out there, which is not ostensibly talk radio. It is a propaganda arm for, you know, the Koch brothers and other right-wing extremists.
For the billionaires.
Yeah, and for the billionaire class. So when James says, well, he doesn't hear people talking about it, well, guess what? You know, when 95% of talk radio is right-wing and there's direct funding coming from the Koch brothers, not to mention all of the corporate sponsors and everybody else, it is hard to get the word out. It is really hard to get the word out. And one of the things that we have to focus on is media. I spend a lot of time, and my office does, on our website. And we now, you know, send out emails to, I don't know what it is, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 people, because we think it's terribly important to discuss issues that are not being discussed in the mainstream media. And we hope people will pay attention to that. It's sanders.senate.gov. We have a website. But it's not just us. There are a lot of other groups and individuals and organizations out there that are doing a great job, and we've got to get the word out. But we're taking on the same old group of people who really want to control the discussion and have the American people move in a direction which the vast majority of the American people are opposed to.
Yeah, let me just correct myself. Apparently most of this money is being funneled through these shows as sponsorship of the shows rather than just direct payments to the hosts.
Well,
so I suppose I'm
another way of getting the same goal.
The effect is the same. I mean, if money comes into the
and
show.
How many of these right-wing presidential candidates end up getting paid by Fox Television to be talk show?
Yeah.
To work on the Fox Television.
Yeah, it's a machine. It's just this giant machine. And, you know, it's just I don't see any billionaires coming to me and saying, let me give you money to talk about raising my taxes. It hasn't happened. We've got
Let's keep the questions coming.
Yep. Well, we got to take a break here. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour with Senator Bernie Sanders, our national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman program. And we'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. And welcome back. Rick, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish TV satellite system in Austin, Texas. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, Senator Sanders.
Hi, Rick.
A couple of comments about voter ID laws. Would it be possible for the federal government to set up an optional voter ID program, which could be run through post offices, the cost of which would be paid, billed back to states, and then pass an auxiliary law making it requiring states to accept this optional federal ID as a form of identification for state voting.
Rick, that's an interesting idea. And I think we are, in fact, looking for ideas to counter what is really a major voter suppression effort on the part of the Republican Party. They want to make it difficult for people to vote. They're claiming there's massive voter fraud, when in fact there is virtually none. And they're going to make it harder for people to get the ID cards that they need in order to vote. So that's an interesting idea, and let me think about it.
Shannon in Aurora, Colorado, watching on Dish Network on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. An honor to speak with you today.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask about proportional representation. You know, the percentages of I remember the ISA hearings recently, 700 and some thousand voters per House representative. It seems to me that we might be better off to increase the House and Senate sizes in order to sort of diffuse the power that the lobby interests have in swaying the vote.
Shannon, your phone is falling apart here. I got to drop you, but did you hear that?
Sound? Yeah, I did. I'm not sure that that is the way I would go. I think the issue that people are concerned about is this issue of gerrymandering, which is very old concept, has been done for a very long time in this country, but the Republicans have taken it to a whole new level in creating districts where it is virtually impossible for their candidates to lose. And I think when we talk about election law as opposed to campaign finance law, I think the direction that we want to go is in exactly the opposite direction. This is touching on what Rick said a moment ago, making it easier for people to vote rather than harder for people to vote. And it's not just getting around these voter ID regulations that a number of states have imposed to make it hard for working people or low-income people to vote, but it's also concepts like maybe making Election Day a holiday so that people don't have to vote after work, but can come in sometime during the day, expanding same-day registration concepts so people can vote on Election Day. Even if they're not registered, they can register on Election Day. There are a number of ideas out there, but the goal should be that as many people as possible are able to participate in America's political process, rather, as the Republicans would have it, as few as possible.
We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. It's 10 minutes before the end. Tom Harbin here with you 10 minutes before the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And Charles in Opa-locka, Florida, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, how's everybody doing today?
You're on the air, Charles.
Okay, great. Well, Senator Sanders, my thing is this. Is there any way that when we give donations to the Democratic National Party that they can, start disbursing some of this money to, let's say, free speech TV, mm-hmm. or any other type of entity that would give us a nationally televised, a network? Because I'm tired of listening about Bundy, only because we just had a big fight with let me just say it, Sean Hannity, over Obamacare, and we don't get to savor our victories. We don't get to say, yeah, we were right. They always mm-hmm. switch the narrative. When they know that they were originally wrong and they can't change anything about it. I don't want to hear about Paul Ryan's budget because basically, when you start talking about tax cuts, you talk about taking away money that the Federal Reserve uses for Medicare, Medicaid, housing.
Right.
I'm sick of
Charles has raised a very important point. Let me just paraphrase, I think, where he's coming from. Tom and I earlier talked about the fact that 95% of talk radio in this country is right-wing or extreme right-wing. Why is that? When you have a country that is equally divided, or maybe more or less Republican than Democratic, how does that happen? And it happens because the right-wing and the Republicans have been very, very smart about it. And Charles asked, I think, an excellent question. And by the way, Charles, something that some of us have been trying to work on. How does it happen that the Republican Party has its very own television network in Fox? Is it possible to build a progressive television network? Yeah, it is. Costs a lot of money to do those things, but it is possible to do it. And why is it that only 5% of talk radio is progressive? Well, we got to do something about that as well. So Charles's point is absolutely right, and it is an issue that some of us are thinking on, and we got to do a lot more thinking, and more important than thinking, we got to do some action here.
Alan in Muskegon, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah.
Hello, Alan?
Senator,
Alan, you're on speakerphone. I can't hear you. Please pick up the phone.
I've called in before.
Alan, I'm sorry. You're going to have to call back in and not use the speakerphone. Let's see here. Russell in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator, two things. One, I wonder why you don't have any anybody as a co-sponsor on your single payer bill, people like Elizabeth Warren or Sherrod Brown, why are they not signing on? And the second thing is, if you run for president as a Democrat, you're going to be asked the usual question, which is, if you don't get the nomination, will you support the nominee, which might put you in a position of supporting someone you disagree with, someone like Hillary Clinton. So if you do run for president as a Democrat, would you support the eventual nominee if you don't get it? And two, why don't you have co-sponsors on your single payer bill?
Well, let me answer the second one. There's a lot of ifs there, Russell. I don't know that I'm going to run. We don't know what's going to happen. I don't, and I just don't want to get into speculation. What if, what if, what if? In terms of single payer, well, that's a good question. I think often in terms of sponsorship, if a bill is not going to advance significantly, and my single payer bill is not going to advance significantly, I think if it was on the floor tomorrow, I would say we get, I'm guessing, 10 votes maybe. That's all. And for a variety of reasons, when you're not going to win a vote, people choose not to co-sponsor it. I brought that bill out, and I think maybe we'll have a hearing on it, because I think it's important for the American people to be able to see legislation which could provide health care to every man, woman, and child, and do it in a much more cost-effective way than what we have right now. But when I introduced that bill, Russell, I had no illusions that it's going to pass, nor did I have any illusions that we're going to have a whole lot of co-sponsors. But the reason it's out there is to give single-payer advocates something to rally around.
Scott, in University Park, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Wasn't there something about, I'm pretty sure I heard on the show, about trying to elect Bernie for president?
Somebody had called in. Oop, we lost Scott. Somebody had called and asked if Senator Sanders was running for president. We've already covered that. Let's move to Alan in Muskegon, Michigan. Alan, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. What did you say, Shane? 2 minutes. Okay. We have just 2 minutes before the end of the hour here, Alan. Quick question for Senator Sanders.
Okay. I wanted to concentrate on the student debt problem.
Okay.
We don't hear very much about student debt in other countries. And that's because in most other countries, there is no student debt. I know, for example, in Malta, that not only do students, and this is from high school on, including college and graduate school, they get a stipend. They are paid to go to school. In Turkey, they take a test at the end of high school, and depending on their scores on those tests, they get free tuition to any university
okay.
in Turkey.
Alan, we have just a minute left. Let's let Senator Sanders go off.
Alan is right. There are many countries around the world, France, Germany, many of the Scandinavian countries, who have made what I think is the very smart decision, and that is you capitalize on the intellectual capabilities of your people and not keep them from getting a college or graduate school education because of income limitations. So, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. My hope is that we will, in this country, move in that direction. And by the way, Alan, you may remember 30 years ago, you had major universities in the United States of America, University of California, City College in New York, some of the best universities in the world where tuition was free. State colleges all over this country, including Vermont, where tuition was free or very, very low. And it is a real tragedy and a real blow against the middle class of this country that college costs have risen to such a degree. And I think we got to stop moving. We got to deal with that issue and make college affordable, pure and simple.
Investing in our intellectual infrastructure.
That's right.
Bernie, or Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
And always. So we will be back with Anything Goes Friday in just a moment. Well, actually, we'll be back with Greg Palast.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. We will get to Anything Goes Friday in a minute. But first, Greg Palast, old friend of the show and an old friend, is back with us. Investigative reporter, BBC News and The Guardian. And he's got his latest book, of course, Billionaires and Ballots Bandits. His website, Greg Palast, PALAST.com. But he's got a new film out, Vultures and Vote Rustlers, which is going to be premiering on Sunday on Free Speech TV on the week, on the anniversary of the oil spill, and on 420. And Greg, welcome back.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you with us, Greg. So tell us about Vultures and Vote Rustlers.
Well, I mean, it starts out, the reason why we're broadcasting on April 20th, that's the fourth anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon. And it's time that someone told you what actually happens. It was, you know, 11 guys got...
Hey, Greg, is your microphone inside your coat? Because it sounds awful. Your voice sounds muffled. Is the microphone inside your coat?
What does this sound to you?
That's worse.
That's worse. Okay, hang on.
No, go back to the way it was. Go back to the way it was.
Try this.
Go back to the way it was.
Okay, Tom, hang on.
Okay. Say something.
All right, I'm with you.
Okay. Keep going again now. Let's try it again.
All right.
That was great. No, okay. Put those back on. That was great.
Yeah, I couldn't stop plugged in.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It'd be very effective.
Yeah.
Hang on a second.
Sure.
Is that working for you?
There we go. That's perfect.
Okay. All right. The reason why Free Speech TV is premiering April 20th, that's the fourth anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon explosion. And I thought that it's about time that the American public got the real story instead of the usual baloney about it being from BP and the government. It was just an unforeseen accident. In fact, 11 guys were incinerated, 600 miles of coastline destroyed. It was homicide, corporate negligent homicide. The real story is that 17 months before the Deepwater Horizon blew out on a Transocean BP rig, BP had an identical blowout on another Transocean rig, but on the other side of the world in the Caspian Sea. Now, I know this because I had a tipster who got the word to us through coded means that this was not the first blowout. This is not, and they had the same cause. It's now been determined that BP's use of quick dry cement, you know, you heard the phrase, you know, letting, washing cement dry. Well, that's very expensive when you're renting a rig for $500,000 a day. So BP turned the cement into a kind of a milkshake by putting nitrogen bubbles into the cement so it dries quickly. But in offshore heavy pressure areas like the Caspian Sea or the Gulf of Mexico, it could blow out this milkshake cement. And that's exactly what happened. First in the Caspian Sea, 17 months later in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, here's the thing, Tom. They covered it up. BP covered it up in the first blowout in the Caspian Sea. If they hadn't covered it up, there is no doubt in my mind that the regulators would have said, you cannot use that money-saving, penny-pinching, cheapo, quick-dry cement in the Gulf of Mexico. In fact, the vice president of BP for the Gulf, David Rainey, testified after the Caspian Sea blowout, but before the Gulf blowout, that that there'd never been a dangerous, threatening event involving offshore offshore drilling. He testified under oath. By the way, Rainey is now facing indictment for lying to Congress, obstruction of Congress, but unfortunately not for the lie that he told that cost 11 men their lives. And the reason why he's not indicted for the more serious offense is the offense he's been indicted for is lying about the amount of oil that BP has, the amount of BP sludge pouring into the Gulf of Mexico. He hit tried to hide about 90% of it. But wow. He never was nailed for the first one because it turns out that our government was complicit in the cover-up. How do I know that? Because of a courageous soldier named Private Bradley Chelsea Manning in the WikiLeaks documents. In this film, you'll see I go across to the nation of Azerbaijan in the Caspian Sea, and I get arrested trying to find my witnesses to the original blowout. You can see me get arrested because they took the cameras, but they in the film, but they didn't take my little pen, which had one of those little Austin Power cameras in the pen. But we couldn't get all our evidence. And then I come back to London. I work with The Guardian. And inside the WikiLeaks document, the United States ambassador had secret meetings with BP because Chevron and Exxon didn't know why they weren't getting their split of the money from the Caspian Sea. And BP said, shh, there was a blowout. And that was in the WikiLeaks cables from our ambassador.
From Chelsea Manning.
To the Bush, it was at that time, this is a transition just as the Bush was leaving.
Right.
Condi Rice was the Secretary of State. So Chevron had gone to her and her people. Because if you remember, Condi Rice was a member of the board of directors of Chevron. In fact, there was a tanker.
Oh, I had forgotten that.
So Chevron went to Condi and said, where's our money from BP? And that's when BP admitted that there was a blowout of this cheap cement.
Amazing.
But the State Department, the two oil companies, Chevron, Exxon, and, of course, BP itself, covered it up, lied under oath to the United States Congress. Because I want to tell you, the Department of Interior did not want to let them drill that deep in the Gulf of Mexico. They said it was inherently dangerous. These guys said it's not dangerous. We have not had a problem in 50 years. You see this testimony in the film Vultures and Vote Rosers. And by the way, just this Easter weekend in commemoration of those 11 men who died because of corporate negligent homicide. My foundation is releasing the film for download for free. And I know that the Hartman crowd, this is one of the eight stories in the film, Vultures and Vote Hustlers.
Wow. Wow. And people can find us over at gregpalace.com as well as over at freespeech.org. Greg, everything you just described is the past, and there's some pretty horrible stuff there in the past, but they just in the last few weeks, correct me if I'm wrong, BP has resumed drilling in the Gulf. Are they still using that kind of phony baloney cement?
That's one of the problems. There's no prohibition on it.
You're kidding.
No, even now.
The stuff that has killed these guys?
The formula, but the big thing, and here's what I'm worried about. The Obama administration 2 weeks ago granted BP the right to return to the Gulf and, in fact, gave them, allowed them to bid, and they won the right to drill in the tract right next to where the Deepwater Horizon went down. My problem with BP is this. If you remember, I also did another story. I was a chief investigator of fraud and racketeering on the Exxon Valdez case 25 years ago. I said the main culprit was not Exxon, despite the name Exxon on the ship. It was BP because BP was responsible for having the emergency equipment and all that rubber stuff and the suckers and all the equipment you should have when there's a blowout.
Right.
They didn't have it in Alaska, and they didn't have it in the Gulf of Mexico. You don't see any of those, and you don't see the rig being surrounded. They could have captured a tremendous amount of that oil. But there was no attempt to contain that oil for 4 days until President Obama declared a national emergency, and the Navy began putting out the rubber skirts to try to contain the oil. 4 days. BP had promised, they're constantly promising, that they're going to be good boys and they're going to spend a lot of money for safety equipment. And they don't. Safety equipment is expensive.
Right. And instead, they give that money to their executives and their stockholders.
Serial corporate wrongdoer. This is one of the big problems. So they, in fact, the containment plan, it's an oil spill, in Alaska's in the Gulf.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Greg Palast, his website, gregpalast.com, his new movie, Vultures and Vote Rustlers. You can check it out there, and you can watch it this weekend on Free Speech TV, freespeech.org. His latest book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, our favorite fan of alliteration. Greg Palast, thanks so much for being with us, Greg.
You're welcome. Happy Easter.
Always great talking with you. Have a great weekend.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with Anything Goes Friday right after. And for our Free Speech TV viewers, just a little quick trailer here for Greg Palast's show that's going to be premiering on Sunday right here on Free Speech TV. Here's a clip.
Catherine Harris calls Greg Palast twisted and maniacal.
No, I'm not. I'm a reporter.
Free Speech TV is proud to present world-renowned investigative reporter Greg Palast. This Sunday, Palast reveals the hidden story of the Deepwater Horizon.
Do you feel that you are paying bribes for BP and the British government?
Palast, the best-selling author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, takes us on a three-continent romp, uncovering a tale of bribery, CIA gun running, WikiLeaks, and lap dancers. Palast goes undercover and into handcuffs to bring you the story the other media won't let you see. Greg Palast, this Sunday. Don't miss it. BP in deep water. Exclusively on Free Speech TV.
There you go. Sunday at 7 and 9 Eastern Time. And, you know, calibrate that for your local time zone. Pam watching Free Speech TV in Long Beach, California. Hey, Pam, what's on your mind today?
What's on my mind is Ukraine. And I've been thinking about this for a long while. I know you started talking about Ukraine and the possibilities here last year. It looks like it's getting worse and worse. And my concern is that we're going to be pushed by the Republicans to rush into something, and not only that, to not pay for it.
Right.
It needs to be paid for.
Yeah, they keep doing that, don't they?
In Iraq and in Ukraine, there needs to be a tax to pay for it. Period.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, if we were, well, first of all, I mean, you know, the Constitution is pretty clear that we can't do war until Congress declares it, and we haven't declared a war since World War II. But on top of that, if somebody were to pass a law or a constitutional amendment that said that military action against any country or even military support of any country cannot commence until Congress appropriates the money to pay for it by raising taxes, I think that suddenly our neocons would get a whole lot less enthusiastic. Pam, excellent point. Thank you for the call. Eric in Newmarket, Tennessee. Hey, Eric, got a minute to the break. It's all yours. What's up?
All right. Yeah, as far as like the $64 million question, I love Free Speech TV, but, you know, we've already had a couple of geniuses, Buckminster Fuller, Einstein. You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, you have to build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And so I think if we want a real grass movement, and not all these scattered, I love and support 350.org and all these other people, but we got to change the whole system. There's too many things. All these money has gotten over the last 200 years, secured their assets. We need a new system. I mean, I was just reading Jimmy Carter's speech in 1976, and he said the same thing 30 years ago. So we need to change
40.
The system. Soon as we, yeah. So as soon as we do that, I think the droves of people will amass into that thing, and hopefully we can do that.
I think people are waking up, Eric. I suspect you're right. I think people are waking up, and I think that I can see it. Organizations, I mean, look at Move to Amend. It's like, you know, they're pushing, you know, 300,000 people, Progressive Democrats of America. These organizations are growing. They're being successful. Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday, so it's your show too. Ashes in Chicago. Hey, thanks for listening to WCPT. Ashes, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. My question was, do you know if there's a website around that shows all the proposed legislation that is supported and sponsored by senators and congressmen?
Do you know about Thomas.gov?
No.
Okay. Congress authorized and funded a website. It's called Thomas.gov, as in Thomas Jefferson, or Thomas Hartman. But I think they had Jefferson in mind. And it basically summarizes and points to every piece of legislation that is introduced or that has passed. And it's got a pretty robust search engine and a fair amount of information. What it lacks is the backstory, the context on the legislation, you know, whether it was started out with Alec or whether it started out, you know, billionaires are promoting it or whether a union is promoting it or, you know, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't have any of that, but, you know, it probably wouldn't be. That would be beyond the scope of the federal government to be pulling that kind of information together anyway. But check out Thomas.gov. I think you'd be very, very pleased with it. Ashes, thanks for the call. Bob in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Mr. Hartman. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
I almost got my subject changed by Mr. Pallas. But I'm calling about in the state of Washington, we have a ballot initiative. We're getting petitions. Signatures for the November ballot. It's I-1329, We the People Claim Our Democracy. We want to amend the Constitution to guarantee that corporations are not people, but only people are people. And it seems to me...
And hopefully it will also say that and that money is not speech and therefore not
protected
by the First Amendment.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. Because those two things have to go together.
Of about the 14th Amendment being used to protect corporations rather than all people.
Right.
I still don't understand that interpretation. But it. What I want to stress is that this... If we get the 300,000 signatures we need by the end of June this year to get it on the November ballot, it will help the turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And the turnout has to help to change the atmosphere in Congress.
Right.
I understand you're going to be in Seattle on the 1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
I won't get a chance to go to that, but I would... Well, my question for you is, I'm into this signature gathering, and I can't believe the percentage of the population that never heard of Citizens United.
Right.
And that your program is on Free Speech TV on Scan TV in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Scan TV?
No, I'm not.
It's a public service channel that...
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Different groups bid to have time on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to watch you on that.
That's great.
Because Comcast does not have free speech TV in my area.
Yeah, a lot of the paid-for cable systems. But what's your question, Bob?
Well, I just would like you to try and talk more over time about the amendment process.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much. First of all, you asked what's the mechanism. You know, why is it that the corporations have been successful in claiming that under the 14th Amendment they have rights? It's a very, very simple thing. Well, the 14th Amendment was passed to free the slaves, along with the 13th Amendment, which outlawed slavery, and the 15th Amendment, which gave former slaves the right to vote. 14th Amendment says that they have equal protection under the law, and it's sometimes referred to as the Civil Rights Amendment. But here's the thing. We historically used to refer to corporations as artificial persons. They had to have some personhood status so that they could sue and be sued, so they could pay taxes, so they could own land. So they had to have a legal status. They were called artificial persons, and human beings were called natural persons. And the 14th Amendment says, and I quote, and just notice when it says person here, it doesn't say natural person. It simply says person, and this is... All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any persons within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So the corporations have successfully argued over the years, before exclusively before the Supreme Court, that because the 14th Amendment says persons rather than natural persons, that it's referring to corporations as well as human beings. Now, the first sentence of the 14th Amendment talks about how you become a citizen, and it refers to persons. So it's pretty clear that it's talking about people. But, you know, by that rationale, the Second Amendment starts out talking about a militia. And I don't know if you saw this, John Paul Stevens recently said we could fix the Second Amendment simply by saying, you know, a militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of citizens to bear arms shall not be forbidden to any person in an active militia. So anyhow, that's how they do it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And over 30 times over the years, the Supreme Court has said, yeah, the 14th Amendment doesn't say natural person. It says person. And corporations are persons. They're artificial persons. So it applies. Oh, it's getting interesting. In Nebraska, the state... Let's see, which office was it? The State Public Service Commission said, yeah, bring the Keystone XL pipeline through. A judge said, no, you shouldn't have said that. It should have been the state attorney general. Or maybe I've got it backwards. But whatever it was, there's this gum-flapping war going on in Nebraska over who has the authority to authorize the Keystone XL pipeline. And whether that's being used as a rationalization to simply depoliticize this or whether that's actually the reason, the Obama administration announced about an hour ago that they are going to extend the comment period for whether you want the Keystone Pipeline, XL Pipeline authorized or not. They're going to extend that until after the November elections, which I think is a good thing. Maybe. I mean, maybe it's... They're extending it because they intend to say yes, and they know that that would hurt Democrats in the elections. I have no idea, but they're going to extend the comment period, so we have a little more time to really put the pressure on and say, you know, this is one of the largest pools of carbon in the world up there, and we don't need an economy running on carbon. We need an economy that runs on sunlight, just like plants do, just like the Earth does. We need to go back to what works. Let's run on nuclear fusion. We got this giant nuclear fusion reactor 93 million miles away from us. Let's use it. It's called the sun. Number one. Number two, last caller was asking basically, it took a long time to get around to exactly the question, but I think I get the question now. He's trying to get people to sign petitions to amend the Constitution to say money's not speech and corporations aren't people. And he knocks on somebody's door and says, would you like to sign an amendment to say corporations aren't people and money's not speech? And they go, oh, I don't know what that means. Or he knocks on a door and says, would you like to sign a ballot, you know, petition to get on the ballot, an initiative to say that to roll back Citizens United? And people say, I don't know what you're talking about. Let me give you some really simple messaging advice. Knock on the door, and when the person answers, say, would you like to sign a petition to put on the ballot in Washington State this fall a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics, or that will have the effect, ultimately, of getting money out of politics or taking money out of politics. People will immediately understand it. They may say, how are you going to do that? And you say, by saying that corporations aren't people and that money is not protected by the First Amendment as speech, that, you know, corporations can't play in politics anymore and billionaires can't play in politics anymore. And actually, the amendment doesn't even say that. It simply says Congress now has the authority to act in these areas. So, I mean, then you can explain it to somebody. But if you start out with that simple premise, sign this if you want to get money out of politics, then you're going to find pretty much everybody's going to go, oh, yeah, I'm with you on that. Grace in Los Gatos, California. Hey, Grace, you want to talk about wild horses? Grace? No grace. Catherine in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Catherine, can you hear me?
Hi.
Great.
I come across some information that makes the Bundy thing a possible remember the Maine moment. I was in the Daily Kos article, the Nevada standoff has nothing to do with tyranny, sovereignty, freedom, or cows. Both the Colorado and Nevada Americans for Prosperity are the ones that are amping this up.
Right.
And you can see the tweets in this article. And then they said Utah and every other Western state that has a Republican governor is working on passing what they call the Transfer of Public Land Act that demands that the United States government hand over all the federal land. And the date for is to the state.
Uh-huh.
Utah is demanding they gave a date of the end of December. And it's an ALEC bill, and it's in various, you can just Google TLP Utah 2012. There's an update for 2004 to amend some of the things in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're looking, it's twofer. They want the land. The only way they're going to make money on it is selling it to the Kochs. The Kochs are pushing it. So obviously it has to do with money and fracking. It's way
or even ranching. The Kochs have almost a half million acres in ranches in three Western states.
But I think it's bigger than the ranching because I think it's bigger than the ranching. I think it's got to do with wanting to buy that public land.
I think you're right. Not just fracking, but oil drilling and uranium mining.
Yeah, I really wish you'd look for the article and you'd read. They're called the 2014 Utah TPL bills. If you just Google it, it comes up. There's lots of stuff written on it.
TPL and what do I go? What do I search on here? I'm in the DuckDuckGo machine.
2014, Utah, TPL, BILLS, and you'll come up with all sorts of things about it. And then you could put in other states, and you'll see.
Yeah.
And then the article.
American Lands Council.
The article was in the Daily Kos, April 12th, 2014.
Right.
At 5:42 Pacific Daylight Time.
Right. It's House Bill 148 in Utah.
And they're in various stages in five states.
Wow.
This, and think of what happens. They force something to happen in a small thing like this. Then they start pushing the government to give back the land. What's that going to do to the Democrats in the election? The White House better listen to this. This is huge. This can cause a range war.
Yeah. This is being promoted by the AmericanLandsCouncil.org, which is, I have no
idea. This is horrible.
It's amazing. Thank you for the heads up on that, Catherine.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
I appreciate it. Thank you. You too. Jerry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Jerry, you want to talk about Ukraine?
Yes, I am happy you took my call. I want to go back to Pam's concern about our involvement in Ukraine.
Right.
Victoria Nuland, whose father's name is Victoria Nudelman, is the spouse of Robert Kagan. And Robert Kagan is the co-founder, as you know, of the Project for the New American Century. She is the one who is handing cookies to the rebels who overthrew the elected government of Ukraine.
Was she not the one whose voice they released that conversation where she was saying basically we're going to put our guy in charge of Ukraine?
Absolutely. And
her husband is Robert Kagan?
Pardon me?
Her husband is Robert Kagan?
Her husband is Robert Kagan, the one and only co-founder of PN, of the Project for the New American Century.
This is like neocons on steroids. I can't verify that that's a fact.
Okay,
right? So.
Okay, you can verify it at your convenience.
Sure.
But the overthrow of the Ukraine government was a joint project of PNAC and AIPAC. And they have a motive, and the motive was reiterated this morning when they accused the Russians in eastern Ukraine of trying to get Jews registered and to pay a tax. There is something very bad going on. Victoria Nuland was a holdover from the Bush administration, a neocon who Hillary Clinton appointed as our chief State Department person in Europe. She's the one who was also caught saying, F the Europeans, we're going to run Ukraine when this overthrow is completed.
Right.
There is something going on as far as PNAC and AIPAC, as far as establishing a war footing against Russia.
Why does Israel care?
Why does Israel care? Because Russia is, to some extent,
an ally of Iran.
A protector of Iran.
Right.
And part of the reason why Israel is afraid to go that route of bombing Iran is not only Obama, it's also Putin.
Right.
And we are going down a bad road, allowing neocons like Victoria Nuland to be running our foreign policy, and Hillary is the one who put her in place.
Yeah. Now, by emphasizing Victoria's last name, changing it to a Jewish last name, basically.
No. Her father was a physician in Connecticut who had the name Nuland and changed it to Nuland.
Yeah, no, I get that. But when people go out of their way to point out that somebody has a Jewish last name, I start wondering what their agenda is.
Okay, my agenda is I am an anti-Zionist Jew.
Okay.
And so, I am not anti-Semitic, so they call me a self-hating Jew because I do not take to Zionism because of the abuses that Zionism is propagating in Palestine and the world at large.
Oh boy, you have opened such a can of worms, Jerry. Jerry, thank you for the call. This is such a complex issue. It is such a complex issue. But the involvement of neocons in Ukraine is something that very concerning.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And Shane just confirmed that Robert Kagan is Victoria Nuland's husband. Bad news. And welcome back, Gary in Chicago, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Well, I thought today was Good Friday, and so I would bring up biblical Jesus and Good Friday, if that's okay.
Sure.
All right. So in Romans 5:18, it says, by the one man, sin and condemnation came into the world. That's the Adam and Eve story. Because they don't listen to God, God sets in motion a plan to restore fallen man to himself. And that plan is Jesus. In the Bible, that's Philippians 2, 6, and 7. Being in the form of God, Jesus is Son of God, he thought it not a thing to hold on to, remaining on God's equality, but right. Emptied himself.
Okay, Gary, what's your point?
The news is so,
By the way, Gary, it sounds like you're talking through a tin can. Do you have your thumb over the microphone or your phone or something?
It's just the phone, that's all.
It's just a bad phone, okay. All right.
Well,
anyhow, your point was?
That the news is so catastrophic, it's so much prophecy is being fulfilled, it looks to me like
maybe.
This is that time.
Yeah, so you think we live in the end times.
Fukushima, polluting the ocean.
Yeah.
This is really catastrophic,
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm not a big fan of apocalypticism, but anyhow. Umberto, thank you for the call, Gary. In Hialeah, Florida. Umberto, what's up?
Well, Tom, I just wanted to say that based on the fact that the 2014 midterm elections for Congress and Senate, so many of those races are going to take place in tightly controlled and gerrymandered Republican districts, that if, in fact, the Republicans increase their majorities in their House and take over the Senate, you can be sure that in the next 2 years, they're going to use that increased power and authority to push through everything that is on their full agenda economically and socially for the country, including their best dream of impeaching and removing from office President Obama. And what I'm trying to say here is that if they succeed in gaining control of our federal government this way, and if they're going to try to push through such a radical agenda for the country, the next 3 years will definitely prove, not only to us here in this country, but to all over the world, just what the progressive left wing of America is really made of. If 2009 and 2010 was the Tea Party radical right revolution, the next 3 years is going to have to be the progressive and democratic left counter-revolution in this country. We're going to have to get off of our lazy boy chairs and get into the streets of our cities, of our towns, organize, protest, if necessary, in a nonviolent way, defy the authority of Republican-controlled governments all over this country, and not allow the Republicans the opportunity to push through any kind of radical transformation of our country. We can do it, but it's going to take us organizing and getting off our lazy boy chairs, that is if you're in relatively good health, and getting out into the streets of our nation and doing this counter-revolution, because if not, the progressive left in this country will be damaged.
We're toast.
Years to come.
Yeah, and not just the progressive left. The entire working class of America is going to cease to be any fragment of the middle class, and it's going to become the working poor. I totally agree with you. And in fact, what you just laid out is the premise of my new book, The Crash of 2016. So you might find that interesting. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and brought to you by goatsforthegoat.com, and find out what's going on in the world. Victoria Jones, happy Good Friday, Victoria. How are you?
And to you too, Tom. I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you. So what's going on in the world?
Well, the Obama administration has made nobody happy today.
By postponing the Keystone XL pipeline decision?
You're correct, sir.
Uh-huh. I thought that was, you know, I was really ambivalent about it. On the one hand, at least they didn't say yes. On the other hand, they said, we'll decide after the elections, which means that they'll say yes when there's not as much at stake. So they're probably leaning to say yes. Am I reading the tea leaves right, you think?
Well, you're reading the tea leaves right. I mean, they're not saying how long the delay will last. State isn't they? They're just saying it's a delay. They're saying that they have to wait on continued litigation over a Nebraska court decision by its Supreme Court earlier this year that threw part of the project's route into doubt. Not the whole route, just right. Through that part of Nebraska. So why that would mean that the entire pipeline would have to be delayed, or the decision over the entire pipeline in principle would have to be delayed is actually, frankly, a little puzzling to me, because this is a decision over the pipeline in principle, not a decision over the pipeline in Nebraska.
Hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. Anyway, people feel like he's punted, and whether he has or whether he hasn't depends on where you look at it from. Nevertheless, it could well drag it past the November elections or into 2015, because that's the court's view, as anybody who has read Bleak House by Charles Dickens knows.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to read it in school.
I have never read it. What is the relevant part?
It's, Bleak House is about it's about an interminable court case.
Huh.
It's a very interesting.
Is it a short story or a long novel?
No, it's a long story.
Oh, okay.
It's a very good book, but it's about the court system, and it's about the desperate, desperate, desperate court case that just won't go on, and Bleak House it is.
Interesting.
The president today, and it wasn't clear whether he was going to do this. Earlier this week, the president refused a visa to Iran's UN ambassador, Abu Talebi, on the grounds that he was associated with the hostage taking of the Americans in 1979. At the very least, he had acted as a translator and negotiator, possibly played more of a role than that. Depends who you believe on that. And the House and the Senate have passed legislation banning him. And the White House had been a little coy as to whether he would sign that. Because what the legislation was an amendment of a part of the Foreign Relations Authorization Act that changes whether you can be admitted as a representative if you've been found to be engaged in espionage or terrorist activity.
Hmm.
Interestingly, the Senate bill was sponsored by Ted Cruz. Well, Barack Obama and Ted Cruz are bros. He signed it today.
Okay.
He signed that.
But
bill.
I mean, you know, this is like, you know, the you know, Citizens Against Child Pornography kind of stuff. I mean, you know, it's like
sort of it.
Yeah, it's you know, we're all in favor of kittens, you know.
I should hope so too.
We're all opposed to terrorists, really. Is the you know?
We are. Senator Carl Levin said today that he wants the Senate to debate and pass legislation to raise the federal minimum wage when lawmakers return on April the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a no-brainer. However, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he wants to take up votes on executive and judicial nominees first, and there is some division among Democrats on the issue, particularly that there is some movement to change the figure. The figure that Senator Tom Harkin has put forward is $10.10 an hour to raise it to from $7.25, which is the number that he says will actually bring people to out of poverty.
Right.
Senator Susan Collins is working on a bipartisan alternative that would raise the minimum wage to about $9. And she thinks that she can get Republicans to go along with that and bring Democrats along and actually get a bill through the Senate that might be taken up by the House.
Hmm. Amazing.
The question is, do we compromise and maybe get something done, or what do we do on this?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think for minimum wage workers, $9 is better than nothing. But, you know, ten is just takes us back to where we were in 1968. I mean, it's
really a tricky one. It really is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
By the way, Victoria, have you ever heard of anybody in Congress ever suggesting that the minimum wage be tied to congressional salaries? In other words, the congressional salaries be fixed as 26 times the minimum wage or 16 times, whatever it is. I don't know what
Whoa!
The... Don't you think that would be great?
I think it would be fascinating.
Instead of tying it to inflation or anything else, tie it to congressional salaries.
That may be too radical for Tom Harkin.
Yeah.
No, not too radical for Tom Harkin.
There's a question for you the next time there's a press conference.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay.
Two Supreme Court justices indicated last night that it's possible that they think that the Supreme Court is going to take up cases related to NSA surveillance operations disclosed by Edward Snowden. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they were at an event at the press club. Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, "We can't run away and say, well, we don't know much about that subject, so we won't decide it," she said. And then Justice Antonin Scalia said, "The institution that will decide that is the institution least qualified to decide it." He said the legal question is about balancing the emergency against the intrusion on the individual.
Hmm.
So it fills you full of confidence that they both said they don't have a clue. They'll take it up.
That's a little breathtaking. Tuesday is going to be very interesting, isn't it? You know, can the government decide whether or not it's legal or illegal to lie in political advertising? That's going to be fascinating.
That's going to be a good one.
Indeed. Okay. Well, I'll talk to you again on Tuesday. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll be right back with more of Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Thursday, May 1st, Friday, May 2nd, I will be in Seattle and Portland, respectively, Town Hall Seattle and the First Unitarian Church, giving talks on my book, The Crash of 2016, and on Friday, May 10th at 7 p.m. in Northampton, Mass. At the Parlor Room. It's free, but you have to sign up over at WHMP.com. And in each event, it's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you there. And let's see, other things in the news today. Hillary Clinton has Chelsea Clinton, I guess, has made the announcement, but that Hillary is going to be a grandmother, that Chelsea is expecting. And already, a conservative talk show host has come out and said that this is part of the Clinton campaign conspiracy. I kid you not. Not making this up. I don't know how it doesn't get weirder than that, right? Well, maybe it does. It doesn't. That's pretty weird. That's pretty damn weird. So, something I want to get. I'm going to get into this in some detail on Tuesday about depression and a whole generation. This is pretty amazing. And here's another piece. These are from the New York Times, from the opinion pages, The Great Divide. Parental involvement is overrated. They discovered that whether you show up or help your kids in school or not pretty much doesn't matter. In fact, in some cases, parental involvement, like observing a child's class, contacting a school about a child's behavior, helping to decide a child's high school courses, or helping a child with homework, do not improve student achievement. In fact, in some cases, they actually hinder it. Very interesting. And then they point out that really what it is it's the poverty stupid. And I was talking about this yesterday on the radio, and you know, if we were to have a guaranteed minimum income in the United States, everybody in the United States makes $20,000 a year, period. Pay for it by eliminating billionaires. Everybody makes 20 grand. And then, you know, if you want to make more than that, cool. Work your butt off. And a lot of people will. But no more poverty. Do away with all the welfare programs. Do away with all the poverty programs. Just go to a guaranteed minimum income. It actually may save the – you may not even have to do away with billionaires. You could just, you know, do away with the poverty programs. Powerful stuff. We would no longer have a problem, quote, a problem with our schools. The problem with our schools over the last 30 years, everybody wonders, you know, why have our schools fallen apart since Reagan? Could it be because he put Bill Bennett, who hated the, you know, the education department, campaigned for president in 1980 on eliminating the Department of Education? He's the guy that Ronald Reagan put in charge of the Department of Education. Bill Bennett, who later had a chronic gambling problem, lost some mind-boggling amount of money at Vegas, and wrote a book called The Little Book of Virtues. Turns out it's not really that simple, that the reason why our schools, in the most macro view, why students in America, if you look at the aggregate numbers, students in America and the United States have been doing worse over the last 30 years, is that poverty has been increasing. If you take poverty out of the equation, our schools are doing better than they have ever done in the history of the United States, and we're doing better than most other countries. And I'm talking public schools here. If you just measure the public schools, there's no need for charter schools, no need for private schools, no need for for-profit schools. Just do away with poverty, number one. Number two, Adam Grant had an interesting piece in the New York Times on April 11th. I thought it was fascinating. It was titled Raising a Moral Child. And the point that he made was that if you say to a child when they do something good, that's good that you did that. you know, it's good that you shared your toys with your friend. That's a very different message than saying to the child, oh, you are a generous person for sharing your toys with a friend. The first message identifies the behavior, or even in some cases incentivizes the behavior. I'm going to reward you for having shared your toys with your friend. Here's, you know, a special treat. The second speaks to the core sense of self, who you are as a person. Oh, you are a generous person. And it turns out that if you want to raise a moral child, the way to do it is to speak to the child as a person, to speak to their sense of identity. It's powerful stuff. Anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday. Enough of my blithering here. I just wanted to share some of the things in the news. By the way, the U.S. and Ukraine came up with an agreement of sorts, and now at least one of the groups in these pro-Russian cities is saying, you know, not us. We're not going to go along with that. Pro-Russia protesters refuse to retreat is the headline over at Financial Times. And, of course, GE predicts healthy China growth. Oh, gee, what a surprise. Princeton study, this incredible study out of Princeton, we talked about this earlier in the week, the United States is no longer a democracy. What the people want doesn't matter. It's all about what the rich wants. The top 10% are dictating the entire political agenda of this country, period. End of discussion. And as you know, in my opinion, the way to end that is to amend the Constitution, to say money is not speech and corporations are not persons. Meanwhile, Duck Dynasty had a music and faith jamboree in Missouri, and it got canceled because nobody wanted to show up. Joe in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Good speaking with you as always.
Thanks.
I just wanted to talk to you about an article that appeared in the New York Times op-ed section that got pilloried basically by the conservatives, which talked about the guy that shot up the Jewish center in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard it, but of course the usual din of people saying, well, that's not, you know, vets aren't violent and all that. And, you know, yeah, right, I'm a veteran. No, vets are not inherently violent, but are there extremists, right-wing extremists in the military? Absolutely. I mean, for them to get to overreact to the story, and I can see where they're coming from in it, yes, there are those fringes, but don't just try to decouple them as long as this guy was a big part.
Joe, your phone is breaking up really badly, but my understanding, I haven't read the piece that you're talking about, but my understanding is that it points out that this guy was a veteran. Is that the deal? Or that the veterans, or that there is recruiting within the military community by white nationalists, white racists, whatever you want to call them.
Right. And okay. It was very prevalent in the late and mid-90s. There was a bit of a resurgence because of the war, you know, because they were drafting people. But it wasn't just white supremacists, but gang members and all that. Yeah. And all I wanted to say is that, you know, it's not – veterans are not – we're not violent people or anything like that.
Right.
But the thing is, if you start to take out the fact that – to belittle the fact, that there are extremists in the military and there are, you know, racists in the military – just because one guy goes off, you know, that's not true. They're racist in the military and racist.
No, it is concerning though, Joe. And by the way, there wasn't a draft back in the 90s, but what they did was they lowered the standards so that you could get in if you were a gangbanger or a felon, because I think those standards are still fairly low. Which is really sad. I mean, we have reached that point that Jefferson talked about where he said, I hope I shall never see in my country a situation where the paupers are willing to be shot at for a sixpence, where, you know, we basically have so much poverty in America that the way to get out of poverty is to volunteer for the military, particularly during a time of war. And it's a really sad thing. But the recruiting of white racists in the military and the recruiting of fundamentalist Christians in the military, as we saw particularly in the Air Force Academy, Mikey Weinstein writing a book basically outing the Air Force Academy on that stuff. This is serious stuff, and it's stuff that our veterans organizations should be concerned about as much as the general public. Good, and of course, Joe, all of our veterans, even the vast majority of our veterans, they're not racists, they're not evangelical fundamentalists, And they're not walking around time as like, you know, PTSD time bombs. They're good people, just like everybody else. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. So what's up? Chemtrails? 9/11? I don't know. Whatever you'd like. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my. Amazing stuff. Okay. Let's see. I've got some calls here, but they're not labeled whether they're Free Speech TV calls or not, so I don't know if I can put them on. Diane. Diane is a Free Speech TV caller in San Jose. Hey, Diane. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's
up? Hi, Tom. Hi. Hey, look, $20,000 a year? That would take a lot of the homeless people. That's all I talk about, right?
Yeah.
Out of the encampment. I'm so excited. Is that your idea?
No, it's been actually the country of Switzerland voted on this, and they were actually voting on about $30,000 a year. It got voted down, but it was voted on in Switzerland just a few weeks ago. So there's a movement in Europe to do this.
You know, it just makes me so happy. And you asked me some time ago, hey, let you know what's happening in Santa Fe, after I told you that there were 40 encampments in Santa Fe. And, of course, I wanted to tell you that I'm working with a city council person. I love her. And she wants to, amazing woman, she wants to house all of the homeless people in Santa Fe. Do you believe it?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I want to work for you.
Yeah. She wants to do what with all of the homeless people?
She wants to house,
to house them?
She wants to house all of the homeless.
Yeah. See, there's two issues that have to do with homelessness, Diane, that I think that we need to be talking about up front and out loud. The first is poverty. You know, a lot of people are homeless because they're just, you know, because capitalism has failed. They were not homeless for most of their lives. They had a bad streak. They lost their home. They're down on their luck, whatever. The second is basically mental illness and addiction. And there are some people who are homeless because they're paranoid schizophrenics. There are some people who are homeless because they're addicts. And they shouldn't be homeless either. They should get the treatment that they need, and they should have access to medical assistance and to housing. One of the tragedies, just like with our prison system, you know, over half of the people in our prisons right now are mentally ill. That's crazy that our jails have become our insane asylums, or what used to be called insane asylums, our mental hospitals, our mental institutions. It makes no sense at all. We're not rehabilitating people. We're punishing them. And similarly with the homelessness, I would say that there is a war on poor people in America right now. You know, Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty. Ronald Reagan declared a war on poor people. And that war on poor people has been going on for 34 years. And there has not been a single president since Ronald Reagan who has reversed it. In fact, Bill Clinton moved it even forward by ending welfare as we know it. So now the social safety net is even more frayed than it was before Clinton came in. So I'm with you, Doug.
I understand because I worked at a homeless shelter. And there were some guys that I had to wake up at like 6 o'clock in the morning. They went to work. Nobody assaulted me. Most of them, okay, were wonderful. They were looking for jobs.
Yep. And that's an issue of poverty. And then you got a few people who are just like, you know, they're challenged. I mean, you know, they've got a literally an illness of their brain, and it needs to be treated. And Diane, thank you very much for the call. We need to be addressing both. And if we address poverty and mental illness in the United States, you know, homelessness is a symptom. It's not a cause. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mina in St. Paul, Nebraska. Hey, Mina, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy Friday. And I'm so sorry, Victoria, but you've got many people here in Nebraska that are joyous over that decision.
Oh, that it's been postponed. Well, we'll see how it turns out.
The reason it's postponed is the governor gave the approval on the pipeline, and Nebraska law says the State Public Service Commission has to give the approval.
Right.
And three people sued and won in court. So there is no no route in Nebraska that's approved or can be approved until this eminent domain issue is resolved.
Right, but is the Public Service Commission inclined to approve or disapprove?
We don't know.
Yeah, see, that's the big...
But a good thing that has come of this is they lose their license in mid-June to go through South Dakota. It expires.
Oh-ho.
And now that South Dakota has seen what we have done here in Nebraska,
very,
they're not going to have as easy a time next time.
Aren't they building the damn thing in South Dakota?
I don't... Well, they're tribal lands. They have not.
Ah.
And I don't know if you're aware of this, but the CIA is coming to Washington, D.C. next week, and that stands for Cowboy Indian Alliance.
Wow.
And
this is an anti-Keystone alliance.
Oh, yeah. And Jane Klebb, who's the leader of BoldNebraska.org, will be bringing them and a lot of Nebraskans. I wish we could come. I have family obligations, and we can't.
That's great. That's great. Well,
but we're happy. Tell Victoria we're doing handstands if we could.
Okay. I will pass that along. Mina, thanks a lot for the call and for the heads up, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Nebraska. Grace in Los Gatos, California. Hey, Grace, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I am well, thank you. What's up?
Good. Listen, I was calling because I was watching the Wednesday show about the whole BLM thing going on up in Nevada there. I'm not a big fan of BLM either, but that is because of the wild horses and the way that they have treated the wild horses. I was shocked to hear that the BLM was shooting wild horses from helicopters. I don't know if I totally believe that, but if that's true, that's a violation of federal law and people should report it. But I was also very disappointed to hear you repeat it's kind of pretty much a big lie by white ranchers that wild horses are not indigenous and they are an invasive species. This has been proven wrong through science.
Yeah, but the original horses that were here were only 3.5 feet tall.
Yes, but you're going back 2 million years.
No, I'm going back. I'm going back 16,000, 21,000 years.
Okay. 2 million years ago, okay, the fact of the matter is, okay, because it's very complicated and there's a long line of scientific research done and it's too difficult to discuss it all on the air, but the mitochondrial DNA proves that horses originated in North America.
Right, right. They were 3 feet tall.
And then spread throughout the globe.
Yep.
In fact, zebras would be considered the feral species in Africa because they came from wild horses that originated in North America.
Hmm.
Wild horses are not an invasive species. They are indigenous.
Okay, let's set that. Let me acknowledge
that.
And I
was so heartbroken to hear you repeat this myth that has been perpetuated through our history.
Well, basically, you know, over the last 10,000 years, it hasn't been wild horses. It's been buffalo that have been the primary ruminants in western lands in the United States. And then there's really good science about how buffaloes turn the earth and actually, you know, look at the stuff that Alan Savory, I mean, yes, he makes some pretty extreme claims that don't hold up, but he Google Alan Savory in Grasslands sometime and watch the little TED talk he did. But that said, let's set aside the argument. I won't repeat that again, okay? If it upsets you and it doesn't matter to me. I don't have to be right or wrong. But here's the question. If wild horses are destroying western lands, just the same way wild, you know, domesticated cows are, what do we do about it?
Horses are not destroying the land. They are our gardeners.
Okay.
They are not destroying the land. They are protecting our land.
Okay.
Not like cows. And cows are not indigenous either.
No, I know that. I'm, you know,
okay.
I'd be the first to
wild,
say that.
Wild horses are, and people try to say that they have no value, and they do. They protect us from wildfires. They spread wildflowers throughout the land. Their poop is 7 It's completely
it's fertilizer.
Non-burning of any kind of you know, plant life.
Mm-hmm.
It's fertilizer. It's,
yeah,
it's fertilizer.
It's not,
it's not non-invasive at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I just,
So what do you do when the horse population? Do you just wait for the horse population to get so large that, I mean, there used to be predators for these large animals. I mean, back when there were horses in North America, there were also saber-toothed tigers. And we don't have saber-toothed tigers. We don't even have mountain lions anymore for all practical purposes.
Exactly, because the ranchers are killing off the wolves and the mountain lion,
right,
which are the natural predators, which keep the population intact. And
right,
the ranchers use the same excuses to kill.
So let's get the ranchers off the land. Let's keep the land pristine. Leave it to the horses, the wolves, the mountain lions. Let them all sort it out. Is that your solution?
Yeah, because you could not touch another wild horse in the wild for the next 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not overpopulate the
okay
land like the way cows have. There are 2 million cows.
I'm absolutely willing to believe you, Grace. In fact, you know, Timu and Pickus's wife, what was her name? I can't remember her name. Anyhow, Mrs. Pickens was on this show. She's been on the show 3 or 4 times, actually, over the last, you know, four or five years. Saying basically the same things you're saying. She's a big advocate for the wild horses out west. In fact, she's got a big ranch where she's keeping them, and she's very, very active in this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can easily Google her. Madeline Pickens, I think her name is. And, you know, so, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Grace. Thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Fascinating piece over in Politico today by Ken Vogel and Mackenzie Wagner titled The Tea Party Radio Network. I will just refer it to you without further comment. I suspect as those of us in talk radio on the left discovered that you know, Glenn Beck and Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham are getting all these big bucks from these right-wing think tanks. And I have never had a left-wing think tank offer me a penny. I mean, the vast majority of the time, I'd say 95, 98, 99% of the time when I speak for these groups, even I don't charge a speaker's fee. That's my donation. That's my effort. So it's really quite remarkable to see literally millions of dollars being given to Hannity and Beck and Levin and company. And then, you know, hey, look at what we're doing here. It's so successful. It must be because people love it. Maybe it's because the billionaires are funding it. Jim in, oh boy, how do you say that town? I'm not even going to try in Wisconsin. How do you say it, Jim?
Oconomowoc.
Thank you.
Really, every fools everybody, but it's really pretty easy.
Oconomowoc.
Yep.
I got it. Okay. So what's up?
Well, what I loved the first hour today with Bernie Sanders and all that, and talking about how we can win elections.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that we don't just buy a newspaper full page, put a TV ad on with just some of the same irrefutable facts that Bernie brought up? Because the average baby boomer or married couple doesn't know these things.
Well, here's the problem. You're not going to find a lot. There are a few. I mean, you've got, you know, George Soros and, you know, I've Nick Hanauer. I mean, I know a couple of these guys, you know, who are billionaires or who are multimillionaires who fund progressive mostly, you know, things like the Center for American Progress or you know, progressive think tanks, whatnot. But the amount of money on the right is breathtaking. And there's a very simple reason why there's billions of dollars being spent on the right and only millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on the left. And that is because if you're a billionaire and you invest money in right-wing politicians and right-wing ads, and, you know, for example, there was one of these pieces that was on, I think Progress or TPM, I forget which website it was, where they were talking about how in one of the major newspapers in the country, there's an entire section called Environmental News, and it's brought to you by a coal company, as I recall. It's a fossil fuel company, anyway. And, you know, it was just, say that again, Daniel? Thanks. It was the Denver Post, and it was over at Think Progress. And it's because if they invest a few hundred thousand or a few million dollars in something like that, they make billions in profits. Whereas when people, you know, when rich people on the left invest in putting out Bernie Sanders' message, they see their taxes go up. And there's many of them who are willing to do that, who would like to live in a more pluralistic and civil society and figure that they've got plenty of money already. Nick Hanauer, is one of the more outspoken ones. You know, good on him. He founded this group of millionaires for justice or something like that. But that's why you're not seeing those ads, Jim. And there are.
I understand we have less money,
yeah.
But you know, I read Double Down and The Center Holds on the last election,
yeah.
Jonathan Alter and this sort of thing. And the conclusion is they beat Romney in the summer by attacking early. And if whatever money we get, we should be attacking now and not waiting till election season.
Yeah.
We've got the facts on our side.
I'm absolutely with you. And I'm doing the best I can getting that message out here. And let me encourage you, Jim, if you can reach out and awaken five people. And if everybody listening to this program, and you know, according to Talkers Magazine, we got about 2.5 million people listening on commercial radio, and then we're also on Free Speech TV. We've got a substantial audience there. We're in 50, 60 million homes. And then, you know, all the other venues that were on Pacifica Radio and American Forces Radio and whatnot, and also on the web and Progressive Voices and TuneIn. And I mean, we got callers all over the place. If every single person listening simply made it a mission of theirs over the next week to reach out to five people and help wake them up, even it might take more than a week to do it, we could see things change. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along here. A lot of people want to get in here. Marsha in Smyrna, Georgia, you wanted to talk about anti-Semitism in the Ukraine?
Well, I wanted to respond to the caller you had a while ago, who's from Fort Lauderdale, who seemed to be all wrapped up in this thing. The fact of the matter is that sources such as Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, and the Anti-Defamation League and others are pretty much calling this fake.
Oh, everybody's calling it a fake.
Yes.
There's a broad consensus that it's a fraud.
Right.
The question is, who's behind it? And the this that we're talking about, Marcia, for people who just tuned in, yesterday there was a group that was at a synagogue passing out flyers to people coming out of services or an event of some kind that said, if you're Jewish, you have to register and get ready to pay a tax and sign up and go to the local police station. And, I mean, this is the kind of stuff they did in Germany in 1934, and it's truly scary, and it looked official, and it wasn't, and the officials have denied it. But there's no shortage of anti-Semitism throughout Eastern Europe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My question, though, is why? I mean, the organization that has been cited says they didn't have anything to do with
it. Yes, Svoboda.
And they're a pro-Russian organization. Now, it seems to me that why would they want to do something like that if
right.
it's going to and then connect themselves with
one of the theories is
because Russia's got bigger fish to fry right now.
Oh, of course. I mean, this would be the last thing that Russia would do. I mean, Vladimir Putin is no idiot. This is not the kind of thing, you know, he would never do something like this. But the Svoboda Party is the essentially Nazi party, the hard right white supremacist anti-Jewish, you know, anti-Semitic, openly anti-Semitic party that has a significant presence in the Ukraine parliament, in the Ukrainian parliament, and pops up a lot in Ukraine. And so maybe they're saying this and they're trying to pin it on the Russians or on the pro-Russians, on the people who are ethnically Russian, who live in eastern Ukraine. Maybe it's another group of ethnically pro-Russians in East Ukraine who want to foment, you know, more conflict with the West and are trying to drag with Western Ukraine and are trying to drag the United States into it. Maybe it's U.S. neocons behind it. I mean, God only knows. But everybody, there's an absolute consensus that it's a fraud. The question is, who's behind the fraud and where are they trying to go with it? And that's a big issue. Marcia, thank you for the call and for raising the issue. Dan, and I don't have any answers on this. I want to get Stephen Cohen on the air next week and ask him about it because he's the guy who knows about these things. Dan in Lodo, Montana, you wanted to talk about the pipeline controversy, Dan?
Yeah, briefly. I've got a simple solution, I think.
Okay.
It seems to me, as I follow the arguing, that the proponents of the pipeline have only one sharp arrow in their quiver, that it creates work. Now, my suggestions may sound fanciful, but, well, go ahead and keep them working. Let them build it. Just don't let them use it. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, well, there are people who are saying, okay, fine, we need a pipeline, but the pipeline we need is a pipeline that will carry water from the central eastern states that are experiencing floods to the western states that are experiencing drought. So, you know, there's an alternative for you.
Wasted your time then, because that's pretty much what I was going to suggest.
Oh, okay.
Once it's built, once
Sorry.
The jobs are done.
Sorry, Dan. But, there's other far more critical infrastructure. This is what Bernie Sanders was talking about in the first hour of the program that we've got to get on. Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Jesse in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. I got a few things, so try to give me a little time here.
We got, I think, 2 minutes to the break, Jesse.
Okay,
One minute.
Constructive criticism of the investigative reporting. Guys risk their life reporting the negative. Start risking their life to report the positive. Number two, we don't need no money to bring down the billionaires. All we need is morality. Jesus Christ predicted the fall of Rome. He didn't need no money, and it happened. Number three, what was it? It was your $20,000 a year minimum is viable. All we need to do is publicize the Fed and collateralize it by the people. It could be done. The main thing is getting speculation out of capitalism or whatever economy we have and have a price cap on how much people could make. Simple as that. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jesse. A fine group of sentiments for Good Friday. It's that Jesse just provided us with our Easter sermon. So, which is perfect as we go into a beautiful Easter weekend. And I'm going to go visit my old friend Gerhard Liebfert, who helped start the Solemn programs in Europe, in Germany and in Russia, all around the world. I'll see him on Easter. So, anyhow, we'll be back with more of your calls right after this. It's 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Talk media for the sane among us. Yes, there still are some of us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And May 1st, May 2nd, May 10th, I'm going to be on the road. You can check it all out at TomHartman.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Lee, watching Free Speech TV in, I don't have a city for you, Lee. Where are you? Lee?
Yes.
Hey, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Wademan, Michigan.
Great. So what's on your mind?
This is kind of a heads up. I was always under the impression that the Costco stores were all unionized.
I don't think they're unionized. I think they just pay well.
Oh, okay.
I think that the Costco, the average pay at Costco is like in the high 30s, low 40s, whereas the average pay at Walmart is, you know, in the $10,000 to $20,000 region. And, I could be wrong, but I don't think that they're unionized.
Okay, well, I was misinformed or whatever. But anyway, I was just going to call to give a heads up to say that they are not, because I was down in Tennessee here not too long ago and went to a Costco store, and I asked one of the employees if they were unionized, and she told me they were not. So
no, they just have fairly enlightened ownership. The people who run Costco, learned long ago that if they paid well, they had lower turnover, and lower turnover meant that their actual labor costs were lower, and so they pay well. And it's worked out very well for them. They're doing just fine, thank you very much, and they're competing very effectively against Sam's Club and Walmart.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is.
It was just, I know that a lot of union people that support unions go there because they know that they pay well, and at least a lot of folks thought they were unionized for that reason.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, I just wanted to get it out there as a matter of information.
Oh, okay. Shano just checked it out on the Internet, and he said actually some of the Costco stores are unionized, others are not, that management has no absolute rule against unionization. Unlike Walmart, where the first Walmart in the world to successfully unionize was in Toronto, as I recall. Maybe it was Ontario. Yeah, it was Toronto. Or maybe it was Montreal, one or the other. And it was in Canada anyway, just over the U.S. border. And they successfully unionized, and what did Walmart do? They closed the store. I mean, they shut the damn store down. They said, that's it, this store no longer exists. And so, anyhow, Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Karen, watching Free Speech TV in Sun City, Arizona. You had a comment about wild horses. We have a minute to the break, Karen.
Yes, I have a couple of comments. A lot of facts that many people are not aware of. I lived for a number of years in central Nevada, and there's lots of wild horses up there.
Mm-hmm.
All the ranchers are not against wild horses. In fact, they use these wild herds as a resource. Whenever they wanted a horse, they went and got one.
Uh-huh.
And some months later, they had a usable, rideable animal. And the second thing I would like to bring up is that now that the BLM has reduced the horse numbers so drastically, these cattle ranchers are finding themselves having to go out and clean out the springs where the cattle drink. Now, if anybody has seen a horse approach a pond or anything like that, the first thing it does is start to paw, sending water all over the place.
Uh-huh.
What this did...
So the horses were keeping them clean, and now the ranchers are in trouble because they got rid of the horses. Fascinating. Karen, thank you for the call. Thank you for the information. We'll be right back. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farner and Daniel Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the folks at the various companies that syndicate this program or organizations, Westwood One on the commercial side, Pacifica Radio and non-commercial radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio News Network, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and the others around the country, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room. Hey, how you doing? To Ellen Ratner, to Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service. To Jay Goodman-Tamboli for tech support. To our affiliates, our sponsors. To Jen for filling in on the phones today and doing a great job on just a wild Friday. I know how crazy it gets. Thank you, Jen. And thanks to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Back to the phone lines, as they say in the radio business. Marty, listening on WCPT in Evergreen Park, Illinois. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Sure. Thanks for taking my call. Happy Good Friday. Great Friday. We were talking. You guys, you were talking about poverty in America, and I came up with an equation over the last weekend that you can tell how broken a country is by how many of its people are broke.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that it's a direct parallel equation, and that if we want to fix the country, we have to stop having so many people that are broke and actually able to have work.
Yeah,
and
I agree with
that's
you.
That's the way you fix the public schools, too.
I agree with you. It's the biggest problem that we have in America is inequality and the poverty that's associated with it. And the solution to that is to roll back the entire Reagan Revolution. From the trade policies to the taxation policies to his war on Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, just roll the whole damn thing back let's get our middle class back, Marty, and let's stop rebuilding Iraq and start rebuilding America. You know, I guess
we need a new deal. That's what we need.
Yeah, we do. We really do. Well, we were still in the New Deal in 1979, 1980. I mean, there were still a lot of New Deal programs going on, and you had 25-30% unionization in the United States when Ronald Reagan took office. It's now 7%. There has been a sustained war on working people for 33 years, and now you've got a whole generation of people in their 20s, in their 30s, even in their 40s, and some even in their early 50s, who have no recollection of what this country was like before Reagan did all the damage he did, and they think that what's going on is normal. It's not normal. Marty, thanks a lot for the call. Nadia in Leesburg, Virginia, welcome to the program. What's up?
This is Nadia from Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Oh, from Illinois. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm supporting Dennis Anderson in Illinois' 14th Congressional District against Randy Hultgren.
Okay.
Hultgren is backed by the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity. We need to send Hultgren packing, so I'm asking your audience and you to go to DennisAndersonForCongress.com to donate and possibly, Tom, interview him. When Dennis gets to Congress, he will protect Social Security, Medicare, Veterans Care, the ACA, health care reform. He is against poverty and inequality.
I take it Dennis is a Democrat.
Yes, he is.
Okay, great. Nadia, Sean Taylor's our producer. She books all the guests on our program, and her email contact and stuff is over on our website at tomhartman.com. Why don't you have Dennis's campaign, assuming that this is not a primary campaign, because I try not to get into primary campaigns. But if you've got a good candidate and you'd like to get them on our program, pitch it to Sean. It's up to, she's the gatekeeper, okay?
The primary.
Okay.
Dennis won the primary, so I will go there. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Nadia. Rick in Osceola, Iowa. Hey, Rick, you want to talk about fossil fuels?
Yeah, Tom, I know the visionary you are, and you've been all over this country, and I've grown up here in the Midwest and been over these acres a number of times. It seems like every time I do something, there goes a gallon of fuel either to plow it or to combine it. We just go through so much diesel fuel and gas and everything. And is there anybody that even thinks of what are we going to do for tractors? Are we going to have electric tractors one of these days?
I think so. I think so. You got farms that can have windmills, and you could generate a lot of electricity, and, tractors don't consume. I mean, typical tractors' fuel tanks are 30 gallons, 20, 30 gallons. I mean, they're not,
We put an extra one on a lot of times. We might be carrying 100 gallons of fuel. 200.
200 gallons of fuel in a tractor?
Yeah. I got a tractor out here. I mean, you might as well go bake a cake while you're filling it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going to be a whole lot more of a challenge to fuel electronically. I don't know. Maybe that's the point at which we start, using electric power like wind power to split water into hydrogen and oxygen and, generate hydrogen and put it in a tank and get a fuel cell or something. I mean, the one thing that I'm confident of, Rick, is that when we start pricing carbon-based fuels, fossil fuels, at their real cost, that we will come up with alternatives because we are incredibly inventive. I mean, just look at where we were before the transistor was invented in the 1960s. Look at how different it was in the 1950s from the way it is today technologically. I see that same thing happening with regard to energy. Thanks a lot for the call. Rick, Asif in Westfield, New Jersey, listening on WBAI. We just have a little less than a minute, Asif. You wanted to make a quick comment?
Mr. Hartman, thank you so much for taking my call. I don't have a question, just a small statement. One of our beloved producers at WBI, Mr. Knight, he passed away 2 days ago. So I just wanted to show my condolences and make a comment that he was a wonderful, wonderful man. Died extremely young at the early age of 60. So he will be missed majorly.
Oh, my. And his full name was?
Robert Knight.
Robert Knight. Oh, yeah. I've seen the emails on this. I thank you for calling and thank you for that tribute. And I'm sure people can learn more about this, or I would hope people can learn more about this over at WBAI.org, I'm assuming. Thank you, Asif, and thanks for listening to WBAI. We will be back next week. And in the meantime, consider my suggestion that you reach out to 2, 3, 4, 5 people. I mean, if every one of us just woke up a couple of people Rather than just talking to ourselves, reach out and talk to the folks that you know. They're in your family. They live around you. You do your work with them. Help wake them up. Democracy needs you. Tag, you're it. See you next week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.